Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Why do we need Christian higher education? That is a question that is asked anew in every generation, and one of the most helpful guides to thinking about that question right now is Dr. David Dockery, president of Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. He has written a new book entitled Renewing Minds, Serving Church and Society Through Christian Higher Education. He's going to be our guest for the program today. We're going to be talking about why Christian higher education, why it makes a difference. I think you'll be interested in this conversation. I also think that it'll be a good opportunity to start thinking anew. In every generation, we have to think the question anew. We're going to be asking the question, what makes Christian higher education distinctively Christian? And just why are we doing this anyway? How important is this? I think we've got to think this through because right now, I'll just tell you my argument. Right now, we are facing one of the greatest needs ever for Christian higher education, and most specifically for higher education that is genuinely Christian, not just a label that's put on it, not just a kind of hope to motif attached to an institution, certainly not a lie, as is the case with far too many, but a genuine, substantial commitment to a Christian worldview. Christian higher education is our topic today. Our guest is going to be Dr. David Dockery, president of Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. He's going to be with us in just a moment. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Much talk these days about matters in the news, and I guess there's nothing probably that's getting more attention in terms of an individual occurrence than the decision by the Ottawa branch of the Anglican Church of Canada to endorse same-sex unions, and in this case, the blessing of those same-sex unions. The Ottawa Diocese voted 177-97 to ask its bishop, Bishop John Chapman, to allow clergy to bless duly solemnized and registered civil marriages between same-sex couples where at least one party is baptized. Now, Bishop Chapman is understood to be an advocate of these blessings and of the normalization of homosexuality. There's no reason to believe he will not approve the request of his diocese, and so it looks like at least one Canadian diocese in the Anglican Communion is going to start blessing same-sex unions. Now, that's just another sign, as the BBC reported this morning, that the North American Church, the North American branches of the Anglican Communion, the Episcopal Church USA and the Anglican Church of Canada, appear to be saying to the Anglican Communion, we are more committed to furthering the homosexual agenda when it comes to the ordination of homosexual clergy, and including bishops, and in the blessing of same-sex unions, than we are to the Anglican Communion in remaining with you. Because push is coming to shove, and very quickly, in the Anglican Communion. Because even as this is reported over the weekend, the Anglican Communion itself, which is now dominated by forces not in England and not in North America, is moving towards reasserting the fact that this kind of action undertaken in violation of Scripture is just not acceptable. The Los Angeles Times put it on the front page of yesterday's edition with the headline, Church Divide Over Gays Has a Global Audience. In this case, reporter Rebecca Trousen is going through several different denominations. This is her point. As Episcopalians and Anglicans wait to see if their fractious global fellowship will splinter or hold together in a long-running conflict over homosexuality in the Bible, other denominations are watching nervously. The same or related issues are roiling many denominations, especially such mainline Protestant churches as Evangelical Lutherans, Presbyterians, and Methodists. And many church leaders and scholars predict that the way these questions play out in the Episcopal Church and the worldwide Anglican Communion will hold lessons for them all. Now, that's certainly true. As a matter of fact, if anything, it is an understatement. Now, here's what's interesting. The reporter here, Rebecca Trousen, suggests that fundamentally the debate involves questions of scriptural interpretation and whether the Bible's teachings are to be seen as unchanging or in cultural and historical context. Now, that's an honest statement. That's the kind of religion reporting we need that gets to the issue and fairly and honestly just sets what the agenda is. But what's also interesting is that when you follow through this particular story, you have a conflict between liberals and conservatives in the Episcopal Church portrayed as an argument over which one of them is the continuing church, which one of them is continuing the tradition. And, you know, that's where I just have to say someone ought to call the intellectual dishonesty where it's found. you're not going to find an endorsement of homosexuality in the tradition of Anglican theology. You're not going to find it. Why? Because it's simply not there. And so those who are pushing this agenda ought at least to have the intellectual honesty to say, we are diverging from the tradition. We are diverging from the scripture. And by the way, there are some of them honest enough. You know, just a couple weeks ago, I was reading from one of them who said, let's just be honest and say the Bible's wrong. Well, at least that's an honest approach. It's not the kind of dishonesty of saying, oh, it's just a matter of interpretation, or the texts are unclear. And so I can respect someone who honestly says, I'm simply going to reject the Bible. I can respect at least his honesty. I can't respect this kind of obfuscation and intentional confusion. There's simply no doubt that those who are pushing this agenda are diverging from the tradition. They ought to at least have the courage to say, we think this is right, so we're going to reject the scripture and we're going to reject the tradition of the church and go in the direction that we believe is right. That's far more honest than trying to enter into an argument over whether they are actually continuing a tradition. Other issues in the news include the fact that Time Magazine is reporting that the use of illegal steroids isn't just about athletes anymore. Even with very, very famous Marion Jones and others, famous individuals and athletes admitting their use of illegal steroids, with ongoing criminal investigations looking into everything from cycling to the Olympics to baseball, you now have Time Magazine reporting that the largest percentage of abused steroids are not taken by professional athletes nor Olympians, but by men in their 30s who want a better physique. Time puts it this way. It says, in a web-based survey of nearly 2,000 self-prescribed steroid users, it turns out that the typical user isn't a competitive athlete at all. He, and it's pretty much always he, is a highly educated professional about 30 years old who doesn't participate in organized sports at all and never has. He uses steroids to build muscle, increase strength, and look good. And he does it not as an easy standalone shortcut to body modification, but as a supplement to carefully planned regimens of diet and exercise. In short, says one internist, they're gym rats. Now, this is another thing that just marks out our contemporary culture from previous times. You know, if you look at generational change and you look at shifts in the culture, I guarantee you this is a shift that you will note. If you go back and find out where your great-grandfather went to the gym, you're going to get a laugh. If you try to go back and find out about your grandfather and his workout regimen, you're going to get another laugh. Human beings basically were kept fit by working hard. They didn't go to the gym. They worked in the farm. They worked in the factory. They worked in the field. They worked at the kind of activity, physical activity, that kept them far thinner than certainly we are today. But the reminder is that we now live in a situation in which we are worshiping physique. We are returning to almost a Greek ideal of the body, and it is causing injury to both men and women. The amazing thing is that the body image diseases are now, in terms of expectation, psychology, and all the rest, they're now spreading from women to men. Now you have teenage boys who feel that they simply are unacceptable because they don't have the right kind of physique. Not that they're not athletic, not that they're not healthy, just not that, in their view, they have the kind of physique you see in the advertising directed towards people their own age. Now, all this is to say that we as Christians are the people who know that we are to take care of our bodies, but we are not to worship our bodies. We are to be careful stewards of what God has given us, and in many cases, we fall short of that stewardship. But we are not to worship the body. We are not to idealize the body. We are to recognize that the body is indeed a passing reality. And here's the thing. You can take steroids in your 30s and make certain that your body later on is going to show the ravages of the misuse that comes from this. You can hang around the gym and try to get your perfect six-pack or whatever you want to call it, but I guarantee you that the ravages of doing this the wrong way and of trying to get body shape by using steroids will indeed show up. In USA Today, Nika Lally is reporting that atheists are complaining that they are presented with just one viewpoint in the mass media. Their complaint is that atheism, even though it centers in the disbelief in God or the claim that there is no God, they claim that there are different variants of atheism, just as there are, and here's their argument, different denominations of Christianity. They say, look, Christians all supposedly believe in God, but they're different, and the press recognizes the differences. The same is true with atheism. Well, I've read her article published in the Forum of USA Today, and she makes some interesting points, but I'll tell you, here's the main point. She's really not talking about many different ideological streams of atheism. She's not really talking about different doctrinal streams of atheism. How's that for an interesting construction? She's talking about different moods and approaches of atheism. There are more aggressive and less aggressive atheists. And you know, she's right. But it's the aggressive atheists such as Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett and Sam Harris and others who are really getting the attention, along with Christopher Hitchens. And my guess is, it's going to be hard to identify atheism with any other kind of atheism than that. And in short order. We'll be back to talk with Dr. David Dockery, president of Union University in Jackson, Tennessee, about why Christian higher education is important. Today we welcome WLQV in Detroit, Michigan. Give us a call at 877-893-8255. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Higher education is one of the primary concerns of any civilization, certainly in the modern age. And when you start looking at higher education in America, you see a tremendous diversity. At the end of last week, Drew Gilpin Faust was inaugurated as the new president of Harvard University, an historian, the first woman inaugurated into that role. And in her inaugural address, after affirming the fact that they were going to be funding a radical expansion of human stem cell research, she said this: "It is urgent that we pose the questions of ethics and meaning that will enable us to confront the human, the social, and the moral significance of our changing relationship with the natural world." End quote. Now, my concern about that, knowing something of where Harvard University is now, is that even though that is a very lofty goal, I can't see how in the world Harvard University can actually make a serious attempt at doing that, since they have undercut the very vision and worldview that gave the institution birth, and that is the worldview of Christianity. With us on the program today is Dr. David S. Dockery, the president of Union University in Jackson, Tennessee, and the author of the new book, Renewing Minds, Serving Church and Society Through Christian Higher Education. You can find my review of the book published overnight at albertmueller.com, and we're glad to have Dr. Dockery with us here on the program. Welcome, Dr. Dockery.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller. It's a joy to be on your program, and thank you for the generous review that is on your website today. We're very grateful for your support of the book.
Well, I was very glad to do it, as I was glad to endorse the book even as it was developing as a project. I think it really is important, and it certainly gets to one of the most important issues of our day. Let me just ask you as background, why did you write this book? You're a busy university president. You got a lot of demands on your time. This had to be a major concern, or you wouldn't have gone to this trouble.
You are correct, sir, and I believe that Christian higher education is one of the real hopes for the 21st century, a place that people can come together to explore the great issues of our day by reflecting on the great ideas of the past, helping prepare a generation of students to go forward into the future. And I hope that this book can serve as a guide for others who want to join with us at Union University in moving forward in that fashion.
Now, let me ask you, just as pointedly as you would invite by your title, what is Christian about Christian higher education?
Well, it's an attempt to think in a way that would honor God with our thoughts, to explore these issues from the standpoint that there is such a thing that is truth, that there is truth out there that is revealed by God, that God has made himself known to us, not only in Christ and in the Holy Scriptures, but in his creation. And therefore, whether we are exploring matters in the sciences or in history or the social sciences or business or economics or English, there is a way that the Christian faith can help us think about these issues to arrive at truth, to address the important and challenges that face us as a society and as a culture in the 21st century.
All right, let me ask you another pointed question here. I think there are a lot of college presidents, Christian college and university presidents, who would have said that 100 years ago, and yet their institutions now, even though they may say they're of the Christian tradition or of some denominational tradition, the reality is they long ago abandoned the Christian worldview. So how do you keep that from happening?
Well, I think you're exactly right. In the illustration that you made just before I joined the program, Harvard University, founded in 1636, had as its motto not just Veritas, which we now find on the seal, but Veritas pro Christo et Ecclesia, truth for Christ and his church. And it wasn't long before the for Christ and his church faded away, and that has been, unfortunately, the history of Christian higher education in this country for well over 300 years. There are about 900 institutions in this country that claim to have a religious identity or a religious heritage or were started by a church organization, but today there are probably only 150 or so who would call themselves still intentionally Christian or actively Christian, even in some vague way, some more intentional than others.
Well, so how do you keep that from happening? How do you keep that kind of declension from Christianity from happening? I know how serious you are as a Christian university president about not only the fact that you want your institution to be Christian in substance now, but in the future. So how do you do that?
I think the key is with the faculty and the Board of Trustees, helping the Board of Trustees understand the distinctive mission of an institution and making sure that in the decisions that are made that have impact not only for a current academic year, but those things which impact 5, 10, 15 years down the road, you make decisions in light of the mission. You recruit faculty and help prepare faculty and equip them to be able to think in terms of, to think Christianly, as T.S. Eliot was so fond of saying, think Christianly about their discipline. And I think unless you're intentional about it, the pull of the academy is almost every time going to move an institution away from their Christian identity. Usually the first way that you see it show up is an institution moves from an intentional Christianity to what I call a two-sphere approach to Christianity, in which you allow the Christian faith to exist in chapel programs, student mission programs, dorm Bible studies, and probably in the religion department or Christian studies department, but it's separated from the rest of the student life and academic section of the campus. When that two-sphere mentality sets in on a campus, it's pretty hard to turn the tables back.
That's an interesting observation. My guest today is Dr. David Dockery, the president of Union University, I think one of the finest of the Christian universities in North America today, and author of the book Renewing Minds, Serving Christ and Society Through Christian Higher Education. To join the discussion, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Now, Dr. Dockery, when I look at your book, and I did find it a fascinating read, a lot of thoughts that you and I have actually had the opportunity to talk about in times past. I'm wondering, are you finding or having trouble finding a faculty that shares this commitment?
You know, what's been exciting, Dr. Moeller, is in the last five or so years at Union University, as we have expanded our faculty, we have had more faculty candidates excited about our commitment and our mission than ever before. Highly qualified academic who understand that they can come and think Christianly with their students here on a campus like Union University.
See, that's one of the things that excites me right now, is because when a lot of people think Christian higher education must be on the defensive, it seems to me that we're facing the potential of a new renaissance. But it's going to be found among those institutions that are serious about how Christianity becomes fundamental to every area of the institution's life, from every course that is taught to every program for students. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is your opportunity to join the conversation and talk with one of America's Christian university presidents. 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with your calls.
to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. I think one of the interesting things about the arrogance of any generation is that we think we're having to think about the big questions of life for the first time. It's as if the question of Christian higher education all of a sudden, just arose. We're trying to figure out how to think about this. In my article published overnight at my website at albertmohler.com entitled, Why Do We Need Christian Higher Education? I begin with a quote from the great reformer Martin Luther, who said this: I greatly fear that schools for higher learning are wide gates to hell if they do not diligently teach the Holy Scripture and impress them on the young folk, end quote. Luther was there in that context explicitly speaking to the dangers of a secular education. That was a controversy back in the 16th century. And boy, it sure is now. Our guest today is Dr. David Dockery, president of Union University in Jackson, Tennessee, and author of Renewing Minds, Serving Church and Society Through Christian Higher Education. I'd love to hear from you out there as to what you would say to a Christian university president about what you would expect of a Christian college or university. In his new book, Dr. Dockery is pointed towards a vision for Christian higher education. I'd love to hear from you out there, parents, students, pastors, churchmen, Christians, thinking individuals, what is it that you would expect of Christian higher education? What would it take for you to put the word Christian in front of higher education? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Dr. Dockery, let me just refer you back to that statement I made quoting Martin Luther here. He seems to think that the stakes are really high in terms of the formation of a soul through education.
I think the stakes were very high in the 16th century, and I believe they're just as high in the 21st century. I think that what Martin Luther and his colleague, Philip Melanchthon, did in terms of establishing a view for Christian higher education grounded in the liberal arts there in Wittenberg is one still worthy of exploring, adopting, and adapting for our day in the 21st century. The stakes are indeed very high. And chapter 4 of the book, we call for reclaiming that Christian intellectual tradition, recognizing we're not doing this for the first time.
So the danger of getting education wrong is not just in terms of the deformation of a professional trajectory. It's not just perhaps a failure to connect all the dots. We're really talking about the fact that education can lead persons to hell. I mean, that's an incredible statement for people to say or to hear in the 21st century, but I believe that with all my heart, and I think you do too.
That's a startling statement, Dr. Mohler, and it is reality. It affects individuals, it affects churches, it affects denominations, it can affect society and culture. It has ripple effects.
Well, the sad thing is that there isn't much Christianity and much that claims to be Christian higher education, and that's the urgency with which I pursue this conversation. Listeners, let me say to you again, I want to know what you would expect of any school that would call itself Christian, of any college or university. What would it take for you to put Christian legitimately in front of higher education? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Dr. Dockery, when you think about that question yourself, what would it take to put Christian in front of higher education? What would you say?
Well, I think the way it's usually described is people talk about doing higher education in a Christian context, which is different than doing Christian higher education. Therefore, I think you have to bring a worldview framework, a philosophical underpinnings, and a Christ-centered way of going about the educational enterprise. It's more than just creating a kind context, as important as that is, a grace-filled context in which education takes place. It's actually learning to see the world from a Christian vantage point and bring a Christian worldview to bear upon all aspects of learning.
We've got callers calling in from across the country to join the conversation. Call 877-893-8255. Let's go to Kingsport, Tennessee, where Linda's on the line, listening on WHCB. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have elementary and middle school age children, and they are geared toward engineering and science related things, and I'm all for higher Christian education, but I don't see a place for them in that venue. I see that as more a liberal arts sort of way to go. What would you say to that? Is there something on the horizon where there'll be more technology available at Christian schools?
Dr. Dockery, give her an answer to that.
I would encourage you to come and take a look at what we're doing at Union. We've just built a $20 million science facility, some of the finest research facilities in chemistry and biology that can be found in the Mid-South. Plus, we have a fully accredited engineering program offering degrees in mechanical and electrical engineering. So we're not talking about just doing theological study. We're talking about doing the sciences, technology, computer science, engineering.
We'll be right back with your
calls. From a Christian perspective.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. My guest today is Dr. David Dockery, president of Union University in Jackson, Tennessee, and author of the new book, Renewing Minds. Now, Dr. Dockery, Linda was a caller in the last segment. I thought she had just a great question about whether science and engineering and those kind of fields have a place in Christian higher education. And it strikes me that there's a great follow-up question to that. And, you know, all of us want engineers to be well-trained. We want the bridges and the buildings to stand up. We want the airplanes to fly. But what would make an engineering program genuinely Christian? What would make Union University's approach to engineering any different than MIT?
Our approach begins with the fact that there is a designer God, an intelligent designer, and therefore all design is modeled after his marvelous creation. So in the arts, we're looking at creation from the standpoint of beauty, but in engineering, we're looking at creation from the standpoint of design and bringing those observations and that philosophical framework to bear upon the way we carry out an engineering program at Union University or at Cedarville or Letourneau or John Brown or some of the other very fine Christian engineering programs in this country.
So if you're talking about Christian engineering, you're going to assume that the stress a piece of structural steel can take is going to be measured the same way, if accurately, at Union and Letourneau and MIT and Purdue. But the big picture is what's going to be different, the understanding of why these rules, for instance, even exist and why they operate in the universe.
Exactly. We're helping prepare students to be to participate in the engineering world in exactly the same way as would take place at Purdue or Georgia Tech or any other place, except the philosophical framework with which we approach the entire subject matter is what's different.
I think Linda asked a question that a lot of parents would have in mind, and I think the reason why she would feel the need to ask that question is because most of us do end up, when we're talking about Christian higher education, so often talking about the liberal arts, and for good reason. It's because it's there that we meet the most aggressive anti-Christian worldviews. That is not necessary to engineering or pharmacy or some other fields, but it seems to be that that is where the battleground of ideas gets the hottest in higher education. Is that true?
Oh, no question about it. The areas of the humanities and the social sciences are where the real challenges are faced philosophically, ethically, from an entire educational perspective. But at a university like Union and others similar to our institution, we're working to create a Christian framework not only in engineering, but nursing, healthcare, education, business, pharmacy, across the board. So there is this broad, full-orbed understanding of how Christian higher education impacts all of learning.
You know, when you talk about business, I just wonder what would be different if more business persons were Christians, but also if more Christian business persons understood what it would mean to think Christianly in terms of the sphere of business, in terms of everything from profit and reward to accounting and all the rest. I think we would be facing a very different business culture. Let's go to Justin from Bristol, Tennessee, listening on WHCB. Go ahead, Justin.
Yes, sir. My comment was that I believe that pastors should be, teachers should be stronger in biblical faith and in their Bible knowledge.
You know, that's another good point. Let me ask Dr. Dockery this question. When you're hiring faculty, let's say outside the Bible or a Christianity division or your school there, let's say you're hiring a chemistry professor. Do you expect that chemistry professor, number one, to be a professing Christian, and number two, to be intelligent about the matters of faith?
We are very intentional about hiring only professing Christians. Christians who are involved and active in their local church, who can articulate the Christian faith in line with the historic affirmations and confessions of the Christian faith, who can affirm our doctrinal statement and can bring that to have influence upon the way they do chemistry at Union University.
Now, Dr. Dockery, let me ask you another question. As president of a university, and also right now, I'm kind of appointing you a spokesperson for the whole world of Christian colleges. Let me ask you, where do you think institutions of Christian higher education right now are coming up short? Where do we really need to be giving some attention?
I think we're doing a terrific job in the areas of Christian studies, philosophy, the foundational kind of issues, but we really need work in the areas of literature, in the arts, in the languages, and thinking interculturally and globally about the future. We need to be at the cutting edge and the forefront of those matters, and I have called for my colleagues to come together in a broader conversation, particular to think globally about the future of Christianity and Christian higher education.
Okay, out there listening are a lot of parents with kids are trying to make decisions, a lot of high school students wondering about where they should go. If you've got the parents and a bright young student before you, why would you tell them that this student ought to attend a Christian college or university? Why Christian higher education?
One, they're going to get a great deal of attention from a faculty member who sees his or her calling not just as a lecturer, but as a mentor, as a guide. Number two, they're going to be challenged to think deeply, critically, creatively, but also Christianly about areas. Number three, they're going to be able to make connections across the board from one subject to the next, think interdisciplinarily, as well as to think more broadly and worldviewishly about the subject matter. And number four, they'll leave with a foundation prepared to enter the marketplace, the graduate schools, professional programs, with a Christian framework to be able to engage life.
All right, now let me here at the end of our time together ask you to go ahead and give us a commercial for Union University and tell folks how they can get in touch with you, find out more about the institution.
Well, thank you, Dr. Moeller. Union University is an institution of about 3,300 students located in Jackson, Tennessee, grounded in the liberal arts, strong residential campus programs not only in the liberal arts, humanities, but also business, education, nursing, healthcare, engineering. We would invite you to give us a call at 731-668-1818 or 1-800-33-UNION. We would welcome the opportunity to visit with you.
And your website.
On our website, uu.edu.
All right. My guest today has been Dr. David Dockery, the president of Union University, and I have been there. I can give you a personal word that it's an exciting place in terms of the dynamism on that campus and serious about this vision. Dr. Dockery, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dr. Moeller. Blessings to you, and thank you for this opportunity to visit with you.
It's been a pleasure. We'll be back with final thoughts in just a moment, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Moeller Program. Welcome back. I would commend Dr. Dockery's new book entitled Renewing Mind, Serving Church and Society Through Christian Higher Education, and I'm glad he joined us today. I want to finish up by just suggesting a couple of thoughts about what makes Christian higher education both Christian and important. And I really appreciate some of the directions that even our callers were indicating here. It really is a matter of Christianity pervading the entire curriculum and the ethos and environment of the institution. The institution has to be explicitly committed to Christian truth without embarrassment. It has to make every course and every program accountable to Christian truth, not Christian truth accountable to the curriculum. And it's reversing that question that really gets a lot of institutions into trouble. I started out with a statement from Martin Luther. You remember what he said. It's in my article published at albertmiller.com. I greatly fear that schools for higher learning are wide gates to hell if they do not diligently teach the Holy Scripture and impress them on the young folk. I think there's a double negative effect you really have to worry about in higher education these days. The first is that persons who attend these institutions can find themselves in such an environment that is so hostile to Christianity that they may find themselves literally unsure about Christian truth. This can precipitate a spiritual crisis. The second thing is, even among those students whose faith is strong and who really know why they believe and what they believe, they can find it so intimidating to be in the presence of so many people who are their peers and their professors that they begin to think that Christianity is something to be embarrassed about in the intellectual field, and that simply is not true. Christian higher education is very, very important. Does that mean that every single Christian student must attend one of these institutions? No. There are some institutions, there are some students, who need to go to Harvard and Yale and Princeton and Purdue and University of California, but you better make sure those students know what they're getting into and are grounded as Christians, and you better make sure they get deeply involved in the life of a vibrant, faithful evangelical congregation during the time they're there. What would make an institution Christian? Well, of course, it begins with the explicit commitment. It begins with the unembarrassed commitment of the institution to Christianity. It begins with Christianity pervading the entire curriculum so that every single field is accountable to the claims of Christ. And it means that the environment of the institution is warmly supportive not only of Christianity but of Christians, creating a warm fellowship among students with Christian expectations. You want your student in a place where the peer pressure is pointing towards the cross, not away from the cross and from the church. It's been good to have this discussion. One of the things I always want to encourage parents to do is to look carefully at the options, understanding that your responsibility as parents, well, let me speak personally, our responsibility as parents doesn't end with graduation from the 12th grade. We are still responsible. And furthermore, we're still paying the bills. Don't pay the bills without figuring out exactly what you expect out of higher education. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.